too.
What do you do with your town?
Yeah, just shopping for shoes.
I love shoe shopping. Just remember, you have a good pair of heels and always double as a self-defense unit.
You're full of good ideas, but I like shoes that can also double as a champagne glass. Yeah.
She's a brand new girl, got a smile for the world. Don't be rude to a trans woman. She throws it from a draw. She's no good trans woman.
And good evening and welcome to Outbeat Music. I'm Michaela Kennan, and this is your first and foremost voice of the LGBT community right here in the North Bay. Tonight's guest, Michelle Rocking Horse Garcia, singer-songwriter, activist, Native American healer, and transgender woman. She has many tales to tell and is now the focus of a brand new documentary detailing the story of her personal journey. Stay with us for a captivating hour of music and talk with Michelle Rocking Horse Garcia.
Looking good in heels and hose, but not everybody knows. That's a man. No, it's not. Trans woman. Nails are red, she ain't even ready yet. Trans woman. Charging cards to the mask chip. A politician lost her voice. She's as happy as a bird, but she can get the last word in. Just a slip, you can flip. If you're queer, hang it like it's say. If you're a dollar, a dice, shout. I know, cause you're a hot gay man. Greek god with a tan. Just a slip, you can flip. Say I am. There she goes. Salon hair, designer dress. She looks good. Those shoes, Dior, Saks, Fifth Avenue, wherever, whatever, she just can't refuse. Dior, Saks, Fifth Avenue, 400, 500, shall I charge them for you? Dior, Saks, Fifth Avenue, what a steal, it's a bargain, do you have them in below?
And welcome back. You are tuned in to Outbeat Music here on KRCB-FM. With me on the engineering boards tonight, Mary Moore Campagna, and you're listening to the music of transgender artist and activist Michelle Rocking Horse Garcia, that selection entitled Trans Woman, from her CD, San Francisco Queers. We'll certainly hear more as the evening goes. First, let's go right to Greg Moralia with the Outbeat News.
Tell it like it is. Good evening, this is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for Sunday, October 14th, 2012. In Denver, the Matthew Shepard Foundation annual gala was held yesterday, marking 14 years since the vicious hate crime occurred in Laramie, Wyoming. 21-year-old Matthew Shepard died on October 12, 1998, 5 days after being abducted and severely beaten by Aaron McKinney and Russell Henderson. Both men are currently serving a double life sentence in state prison. Since the death of her son, Judy and Dennis Shepard have been leading the Matthew Shepard Foundation with the goal of replacing hate with compassion, understanding, and acceptance. Over 400 people gathered at this year's dinner, both to mourn the loss of the shepherd's oldest son, but also to celebrate how Matthew's story has caused great change in the world. One of the most visible elements of change was the signing of the Matthew Shepard James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act into law just 2 years ago this month by President Barack Obama. This addition to federal hate crime law added sexual orientation, gender identity and expression, and disabilities to the list of identity groups protected by federal law. You can learn more about the continuing work of the Matthew Shepard Foundation at www.matthewshepard.org and www.matthewsplace.com. And here in San Jose, Police Chief Chris Moore is trying to make it better for his LGBT employees. This week, Chief Moore issued a department-wide memo acknowledging National Coming Out Day and encouraging his lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender employees to come out. He wrote, "The department recognizes the difficulties faced by individuals who have felt they would not be encouraged or supported if they came out. Additional stress and anguish can result from hiding a person's sexual orientation. As a progressive organization, the department encourages members to be who they are and to understand that your sexual orientation will not interfere with promotional considerations, assignment selections, or professional relationships within the organization." The memo follows a one-day training held this past July for all command staff on LGBT issues presented by four openly gay members of law enforcement. The day after the training, a 56-year-old veteran of the San Jose Police Department came out for the first time in his life. Thanks, Chief, for making a difference. And also here in the Bay Area, a teenager has become the latest Boy Scout to be kicked out of his troop because of the organization's national policy of excluding gay members and adult troop leaders. Ryan Anderson's mother, Karen Anderson, launched an online petition this week to get the master of her son's troop to sign off on a project that will allow the 17-year-old to become an Eagle Scout before he reaches the cutoff age of 18 next week. She said the scoutmaster refused to approve the project, which was a tile wall with an anti-bullying message, after Ryan came out as gay in a letter to his troop in July. The boy's father, Eric Anderson, resigned his spot as a troop administrator after the scoutmaster informed him that he would not approve the project. Ryan installed the tile wall at his former middle school, where he says he was bullied because he was perceived to be gay. Boy Scouts of America spokesman Darren Smith said the organization doesn't ask about a member's sexual orientation, but does enforce the gay ban on individuals when making statements about themselves. Mr. Smith said, quote, "While the Boy Scouts of America did not proactively ask for this information, based on his statements and after a discussion with the family, he is being informed that he is no longer eligible for membership in scouting." Smith also claimed that Ryan had notified his unit leadership and Eagle Scout counselor that he does not agree with the scouting's principle of duty to God, another condition of being an Eagle Scout. Mrs. Anderson said Ryan has never said that he does not believe in a higher power, and the only reason he's being denied the rank of Eagle Scout is because the Boy Scouts of America has a problem with Ryan being gay. Boy Scouts of America leadership reaffirmed the organization's long-standing ban on participation by gays and lesbians this past July. The U.S. Supreme Court upheld the group's right to have this ban back in 2000. Now here's your calendar of events for the coming week. On Monday, October 15th, from 7 to 8:30 p.m., Jesse's Parent Support Group will meet at the Positive Images Center, 312 Chin Street in Santa Rosa. And on Tuesday, April 17th, from 6 to 7:30 p.m., the Trans Group will meet at the Positive Images Center in Santa Rosa. On Thursday, October 18th, from 9:30 to 11 a.m., Spectrum will host the Novato Senior Breakfast at Sam's Place, 1545 South Novato Boulevard in Novato. And on Friday, October 19th, from 10:30 a.m. until noon, the Sonoma Valley Seniors Group will gather at the Vintage House Senior Center, 264 First Street in Sonoma. And on Saturday, October 20th, from 10 a.m. until 5 p.m., Food for Thought Food Drive will take place at the 4th Street Safeway in Santa Rosa and the Guerneville Safeway, as well as Oliver's in Santa Rosa. And also on Saturday at 8 p.m., the Rocky Horror Sister Show will hit the stage at the Monterio Theater. The Russian River Sisters production will benefit their general fund and the Guerneville Community Holiday Dinner. Admission is $20 and tickets can be purchased online at the sisters' website, rrsisters.org. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia. Now back to Outbeat Music with Michaela Kennan. We'll be right back.
superstar. If you're gonna rock and roll, you're gonna break hearts or be a dumb time. So they bought themselves some fancy gear, a Fender Strat through a tube. It didn't take long before their nails got grooves. But where's the girl for you? But she could be big if only you'd give them a rock and roll music contract. They could draw thousands for miles around, give old men heart attacks. They could learn three chords in just a week. In a month they might even know nine. So how long does it take to be a rock star? She's running out of time. Salad when you're valiant and your daddy is rich. Don't have to play by rules when you lead a band of fools. You'll gig anywhere underneath the stairs. You smoke in the shower. You're rocking to a vow.
She got girl power.
Saw you with your new band at the mall. They had no soul when they played, but Vegas love you, hope you get laid. Gamble it all away. Bad reviews from your last show, no one knew what to say. And your girl Beth from Nashville left you for a gig in LA. But you could be big if only they'd give you a rock and roll music contract. You could draw thousands for miles around, give old men heart attacks. You could learn three chords in just a week. In a month you might even know nine. So how long does it take to be a rock star? She's running out. Make it, make it, make it. No one cares. Just don't break it.
Break it, break it, break it, break it. Own it, own it, own it.
Got no talent. They'll just clone it.
Shake it, shake it, shake it, shake it. Make it, make it, make it, make it.
They'll all know it isn't vacant. illusion that's clear. Let the magic.
And that was Michelle Rocking Horse Garcia that you're listening to. Two tracks, this time from her new CD, Dead End. The first, She's Got Girl Power. And second, Great Mystery of the Sacred. My guest tonight has lived many, many lives in a very, very short time. She was born into this world as Erin Grayhorse, grew up in a lifestyle filled with music, and then later had the opportunity to play with some of the finest pop rock musicians known today. Along the way, Erin's emerging sense of himself as a Native American true spirit drew him deeper into the realization of his transgender nature, and thus began a personal journey that transformed him into the woman he is today, known as Michelle Rocking Horse Garcia. Michelle is as colorful as her story, as dynamic as her range of musical skills, and solid in her sense of self as an activist and liaison for the LGBT community and lifestyle. Michelle, I'm happy to have you with us tonight, all the way from Fairview, Tennessee. Are you there?
Yeah, and we're all here in Nashville, all right. That's where the big howdy out there to everybody listening in California.
Excellent, excellent. And may I say that We originally had planned on having Michelle with us here in studio, but as schedules sometimes change and plans go awry, we have her with us tonight virtually, and that's pretty much just as good. So how was your trip home, Michelle?
Oh, it wasn't bad. It wasn't as bad as my flight coming out there, but, you know, California stay was excellent, and I'm anxious to come back for the debut of the film coming up November 3rd at the Center.
Absolutely, and we're going to get to that shortly. So let's backtrack a bit. You were just out here. You were visiting. You did do a bit of extra filming, and you gave a concert at the LGBT Center in San Francisco. How did that go?
Well, it was for the release, as you know, of my CD, Dead End Street. And it was on a weekend that San Francisco was, thought to have had more people than they have had there in the last three decades. And they thought it would be packed because of the Blue Angels were flying over, and of course the Bluegrass Festival was there, and just a bunch of other things were going on, and of course my concert for Dead End Street. It was a lot of fun. There was a lot of anticipation. I'm hoping the film goes really well, and we're looking forward to that.
Good. And as we were talking before, I think you can just consider the fact that you were a headliner right up there with the Bluegrass guys and the America's Cup and all those other people. And there's Michelle Rocking Horse Garcia.
I'll tell you, it was kind of bizarre because I think because so many people thought that there was going to be so packed that they anticipated not going because it was going to be really, bumper to bumper, but fortunately, it wasn't so bad. And those who got to go to the city and brave enough were fortunate to see a lot of things that day.
Good. Well, let's kind of backtrack a little bit, beginning with the early days and some of the musical influences that were around you. Tell us a bit about growing up in a musical family and how your own interests began.
I really hadn't started with my dad's saxophone and the Saturday afternoons that my mother made him play in the bathroom. And he always used to play with some kind of Cuban jazz or some kind of Latin jazz of some sort. And so I grew up with that infectious rhythm in my heart, you know. But the Beatles were huge, and, British music was such a huge impact in California music during the 60s when I was growing up in high school. I loved rock and roll, and I had to try and kind of just, do what was popular at that time. And I really enjoyed it. And I probably didn't incorporate Latin music into my own writing, and maybe not until about 10 years later.
Wow. So some of the early 60s influences, the Beatles, obviously.
Yeah, and Joni Mitchell and all that kind of singer-songwriter style of writing. Mm-hmm. People like Jackson Browne and, of course, Bob Dylan were such a huge impact on me lyrically because they not only had great songs musically, but they had a lyric that was, commanding and kind of a village voice, community voice.
Right.
A walking newspaper, you might say. Mm-hmm. That's a walking, singing newspaper. And I love what that the exchange of how the people, respond to those kinds of writers. And Stevie Wonder, and he is such a magical person in my life, and I got to witness something that was different for me because it was not a song I had ever heard before, and he had played a song that was part of a soundtrack that just really moved me, that was touching because it was political and had something to do about the earth and our responsibility towards the earth. And that's the way I felt pretty much with my own songwriting. Mm-hmm. Since the day that I started writing back in the 60s.
Now, did you start out with guitar, or did you ever?
I did. Well, actually, it would be fair to say ukulele. My folks gave me a ukulele several times for Christmas, but I did not actually enjoy it until I was 9 years old, and I played the heck out of that thing until my brother sat on it.
Oh no.
Yeah, it was a plastic one, you know, and unfortunately he didn't mean to sit on it, but it just complained, you know. And
oh, how sad.
Then I had to move up. And my next love was a guitar, so fortunately there it was.
Good. Now, did you take professional lessons, or are you kind of self-taught?
I did not. Actually, I learned out of a book, and most guitar players will always go to the basic, and that was Mel Bay, all the Mel Bay books.
Yes, I learned on Mel Bay as well.
You did?
I did.
Good for you. But they have such goofy songs, just some really, really stupid basic cowboy songs of some sort, you know, for a four-year-old child. And, and mares eat oats and does eat oats.
Out in the West Texas, Lamptown of El Paso, all those kind. Yeah, I remember those well. DG&E.
Yeah. So I wanted something a little bit more challenging than that. And so I broke away and I just bought the 1,000 chords from Mel Bay, and I kind of like learned about 500 of them and got the hang of it and started just writing my own stuff.
Good.
It was a lot of fun.
Excellent. So you worked your way into kind of a professional circuit at that point.
Well, I was lucky. At the age of 13, when I was in high school, I met my other friends who were in school, and their dads were musicians, and we put a band together called The Tangents. And that band went from being terrible to great.
Okay.
Because we were all learning, we're just kids and all of that. And so, by the time we were seniors, we were like, booking college gigs and that kind of thing and morphing into other bands. And so it was a good stepping stone for us.
Great. Now, did you play with some big names? Did I hear that you had?
Well, we kind of opened. We opened for some folks that, lots of people heard of. And, but I had a chance to actually play with Taj Mahal.
Yay.
And he came around looking for blues bands for when he was going to be signed I forget. Anyway, he came out to our house and he was kind of like checking out each member of the group, and he finally got over to me, and I was playing bass. He's going, okay, you hold that. And he, like, didn't even give me a blink of an eye, because apparently I was doing it right.
Okay.
But everybody else, he did. And later he pulled me aside, and I was so honored that he would pull me aside and said, come on, I want you to do a gig with me. I'm going to go play with this guy. He's a piano player. He's been playing, blues forever, and we're going to jam with him. I said,
wow.
Okay, great. And so there was some older cats there, and there was me. I was 19 years old, 21 or something like that, maybe even. But we were going to jam, and so the piano player goes, okay, Michelle, hit it. And I said, what key were playing it? He goes, E flat.
Oh, no.
And for a kid, it was just really learning your stuff. E flat will trip you up, and it is like the musician's key. And I wasn't ready for it playing big time, but I managed to play a little bit with Taj Mahal. That was a lot of fun.
That's cool. Yeah, I know that's far beyond the 500 chords that you probably initially heard or learned. So,
well, E flat is just not one of the keys. I mean, it's great for horn and everything. And now, of course, I'm a big girl. And I can play in any key.
Yay, that's great.
I actually do have several saxophone players that play with me in my band. I'm really excited about the new band that I have for the Bay Area.
Good, good. We'll get more into that. Let's do a little bit of a musical break here. We're going to do a little blast from the past, okay? I'm speaking with Michelle Rocking Horse Garcia. See if you can remember this one.
Hey, yeah. rest of it. There's more soldiers sneaking up behind the band. You should have told her the way around the tragedy. No place left to hide. Yeah. Run for it or die. Disaster, disaster, it's just around the corner. Somebody hear my prayer tonight.
Yes, and Fighting for the Good of Man, circa 1986. Remember that one?
Oh, my gosh. You know, I had heard Great Mystery of the Sacred that you had played there before, Michaela, and then you played Fighting for the Good of Man. You know, you actually put the thumb on my songwriting pulse and motivation from those early days. I was very politically involved with the Native American movement and just, you know, I was an angry young man. But, you know, as we all get older and things change anyway, and then plus being transgender, oh my gosh, was I in for a lot of changes.
Well, you know, and that's actually an excellent segue, because we were hearing Aaron at that point with that song.
Right.
But where in the scheme of things, then, did you begin to realize yourself, and how did all of that start to come about?
Well, I was born with the name Michelle Garcia, and Michelle Aaron Garcia. And people used to think that I didn't know how to spell my name right, or that, you know, I had a girl's name and I was messed up. And so I always got teased until I was in high school, when I actually started to change my name a little. And that kind of, you know, helped me out in my transition. But, yeah, by the time that I was out of high school, I was into my Native American persona, which was Aaron Greyhorse. And that went through my radio days and more.
I see.
Go ahead.
Well, talk a little bit about that period in your persona and the Native American lifestyle. You're referred to as a two-spirit. For those who don't know what two-spirit is, can you explain that?
Oh, sure. You know, two-spirit is somebody that identifies with these two different spirits within their own makeup. And in our case, being transgendered, it's like having a female and a male persona. It doesn't matter if you are a male to female transsexual, or if you are a female to male transsexual. You are two-spirited. You have that experience in your life where you've encompassed both of those ideas, and not only, walk that road spiritually, but you also walk that road material in this life. And so the experience is very deep.
Mm-hmm.
So So when you're two-spirited like that, you know, the old Native American the Anasazi until, oh gosh, through the 1800s, they revered these two-spirited Native Americans and gave them the honor of doing wedding ceremonies, and they were name givers, and they would bless certain other kinds of ceremonies, you know, coming of age and that kind of a thing. And so it was really something that I could take to heart and revere, being two-spirited myself.
Now, did you know early on that you were two-spirit, or did you kind of wonder about it and, you know, do the process like many of us?
Yeah, well, when I was five, I remember hearing my folks talking with my relatives and their friends, you know, well, why did you name, you know, him Michelle, you know, and then, you know, well, my folks explained, well, we wanted a girl, and, you know, but having Michelle was fine, and we just leave the name the same because in the French it's just as common as Michael is. So.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there I was.
Oh, my.
My mom told me, she said, you know, when I was pregnant with you, I prayed over my tummy and I would say, please God, make it a girl, you know. And I even said in the film, I said, Mom, you didn't pray hard enough. You know, and so, but she got her wish after all, because here I am now.
Here you are today. When you started to make the transition, was it easy for you professionally?
Oh, God. It is definitely the hardest thing that I've ever done, you know, par of to none. And I'm not going to tell you all some of the stories of the days, you know, when I was this, you know, angry young youth, because you
right.
would do a number of things. But later, as I became the lady and the woman that I am today, you know, I look back at those times and I go, oh my gosh, well, that's amazing, but I'm so glad I never got killed. And but, you know, today with the hate crimes that sweep our nation, you never know, and things can change at any time, but I'm still, you know, willing to be a person that is out and being an activist for our cause.
Sure. Okay, so let's go right up then to the fact that your story has just been chronicled in a new documentary called Tipping the Scales. It is your life story.
Tipping the Scales, yeah, Tipping the Scales, uh-huh.
Tell us a little bit. Give us a quick overview.
Oh, gosh. Well, Tipping the Scales also happens to be one of my songs, and it's kind of an overview of all the things that could trip you up and you know, all the little detours in life. And sometimes we need to be smart about those kinds of things that happen to us. And if we are challenged, and if we are part of the LGBT community, or if we're even challenged in other ways, you know, we need to be prepared and figure out how we can tip the scales.
Mm-hmm.
And so with the films that Gary Carnival produced, and myself, we began to, like, take all the things that were key in challenging the changes that I was going to go through and what I had gone through in regards to my own ethnic upbringing, working with a Native American, and my family, of course, you know, we're all Latina and Latino, and that was hard to overcome because they were not accepting of me until much later, after mm-hmm. I had transitioned, and it's been over 20 years for me now, and so, you know, but my family has only warmed up to me in the last 5 years, and so I'm very grateful for that, but gosh, you know, those 15 years of being shunned and feeling ashamed and you know, not having a family to rely on,
yeah.
It's really tough, especially when you're transitioning.
Mm-hmm. It is hard, and thank you for being courageous and keeping on with the process, because I'm sure there were times when you thought, is it worth it?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, we always look at the alternative, and you know, and a lot of us, unfortunately, and my friends were not to be any exception, but they thought suicide was the only way out, mm-hmm. you know, and you and I well know that that's not an alternative. It's just not a choice at all. To make life is the choice, and
right.
and no matter how we have to come to grips with that we are queer, that we are different, we must find a way, and mm-hmm. we can't do it by ourselves. You know, a support system, whether it's you know, a foundation or just a good friend that you know is queer. You know, I have a song. It's called "Out in the Rain." That I wrote on the San Francisco Queers album, and it's kind of a coming out story about, you know, who was your first person you told? You know, it was always your best friend, and you know, and you were hoped that they were non-judgmental, and sometimes, you know, you found out that they were queer too.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fun. I love the LGBT stories.
Good. Well, we'll talk more about that next week, because I'm actually going to interview Gary and we're going to talk about the production of the film.
Okay,
and that, you know, I'm anxious to get into just kind of the nuts and bolts of how the whole thing was conceived and the process behind it. And do you feel good about it now that it's finished?
Oh gosh. You know, it's like I'm excited at the same time. I love what Gary's done, and it's been a labor of love, and I feel really positive about it. But it's also like a baby that you don't want anybody else to see, because it's not quite right yet.
Uh-huh.
You know, and you just want to keep working on it even after it's finished. But I think John Lennon said, you know, you just got to let it go, and you know, there were songs that he wrote that were recorded that he would, you know, change today if he was alive.
Right. And I think all of us who are creative go through those sorts of processes and doubts and thinking, well, maybe we can add this or that. So,
right, but now that it's done, you know, I feel great about it.
Is it strange for you to see yourself on a big screen?
Yes and no, because I got kind of used to being a little bit, you know, in the limelight from being a musician all through the years. But in a documentary, it's real different, because there I am, I'm speaking, you know, I'm coming from my heart, and I'm sharing the intimate part of who I am, and, you know, which is, you know, it makes yourself a little vulnerable.
Right.
And as LGBT folks, we're already that way, but I feel that, you know, like anything, like coming out, when you make yourself and expose yourself this way, it's a healing thing for our community, because we need to feel a lot more empowered, and we need to see people, others' success stories, you know, and because it's not just my success story, it's the community's success story, because, you know, the support we get.
Absolutely. Well, in the process of this, then you have produced 3 CDs. The latest, of course, is Dead End. But your first was San Francisco Queers, right?
It's Dead End Street, Michaela.
Dead End Street, it is.
Dead End Street, yeah. It's the little red. If you take a look at the CD, you'll see it. It's got that little red underneath, and it says Street.
It does say Street, and I've got a typo here. But I've got your CD in front of me, so I apologize for that.
Oh, no worries. And then I like my scenes are always, I always have a song on there that is actually the title of the album.
Mm-hmm.
And so this being no exception, it's the 12th cut on there, the 12th cut, Dead End Street.
Yeah, and we're going to hear that as we go out at the end of the hour. But I wanted to talk just a little bit, too, about your Laughing in the Kitchen, subtitled A Musical Treat in Culinary Refinement. Let's hang on. I want to play let's play a little track. We're going to name that vegetable. Let's play just a little bit of that.
Oh, fun.
Okay. all the bugs in the neighborhood ate you up before we could string bean, if you know what I mean. String bean keeps your body clean. What makes you taste so licking good? I'd eat you any day I would. When meals are in between, you're even better than old string bean mushroom. Lunch begins at noon.
You realize that's one of those songs that kind of just keeps going round and round in your head. I keep singing String Bean.
It's one of my most favorite songs on that whole album. It was kind of a guess what I'm singing about song, you know, that kind of kept really caught on with kids and adults and likewise. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And why did you, this is such a diversion from some of the other things that you've done.
Well, as I was mentioning, each album that I wrote and has a theme. And one that I released in 2000, it was called Spanish Traveler. And I was so afraid. It was my first transitioning album from male to female. And I was so frightened of my voice, and I didn't have it quite right, you know, in a way. And so I released a Latin jazz album, instrumental. And then I, you know, felt good enough, and then that's when I, you know, released San Francisco Queers. And then this last album, Laughing in the Kitchen, that you heard Name That Vegetable off of, that to date is probably my most fun album of all, because it's just, every song is about food, and every song is has a humoristic or, you know, comedic tone to the whole thing.
Yeah. And is it true that you're going to be releasing a recipe book?
Yeah, it goes with the album. So if you get the album now, no worries. And but the recipe book will be in there soon. And it should be by the end of this year. So I'm getting it ready for Christmas. But it won't be any more money than the album is now. So if you want to wait, that's okay, but it is a fun album, and if you love good cooking and your early rise, or, you know, if you just want to get some ideas or just want a good laugh, this is a great choice, Laughing in the Kitchen.
Yeah, and some of the CD title or the track titles, here's Secret Recipe, here's Company's Coming Over Blues, See You at Supper Time, Chili and Beans. It's a great, fun album. It is. It just makes you smile. Toe-tapping.
Okay.
And I'd love to see the recipe book, because I'm a big foodie as well. So.
Oh, well, I'll make sure I'll put that on my list for you, Michaela.
Okay, good, good. Well, as most of our listeners know, when I talk to my guests, I like to really kind of feature music with a message. And your music certainly fits that bill. It's very personal. It has a social commentary element to it. Talk about why you write what you write and what you hope it conveys to the listener.
Hmm. Yeah. One time I remember Bob Dylan was interviewed, and they say, Bob, how do you write all those social commentary songs of yours and everything, and how come you write so many of them? You know, you seem to be an endless, and I just pick them down from the sky. You know, when you channel that right, I don't really mean to get, you know, new agey or anything like that, but, you know, musicians, like athletes, can stand in the zone, so to speak. When you're in the zone, you are able to channel these messages, songs, all of that. Sometimes a whole song will come to me, lyrics and music, and I'll hear the whole thing. I'll even see it arranged by my favorite band.
Wow.
or I'll just be standing on the bus and some little melody will come to me because of somebody walking by, and it's the rhythm of that combined with the plane going overhead, and then I'm off to a new song. I kind of live in this audio world.
Mm-hmm. Very understood. And you are a conduit. You are open, and when the inspiration strikes, the muse is there, and you're there to receive it. That's great.
The inspiration strikes used to be when I was in my 20s, but then when I started getting mature and kind of a little bit more advanced in my writing, I'm able to write whenever I want to.
Good, good.
Yeah, I'm very fortunate.
So Tipping the Scales will debut in San Francisco on November 3rd.
At the SF Center, which is right on 1800 Market Street, at 3 o'clock.
Yes.
In the afternoon.
And the website for that is?
The website for that is, it's sfcenter.org.
Okay.
And you can get the information for them by just, dialing in, typing up Michelle Rocking Horse Garcia.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's a mouthful, but it's got to all be there.
It's got a it's got a great rhythm to it, though. Absolutely.
Oh, well, thank you. It morphed that way. It's very interesting the way my name came about and the way I just kind of fell into it and had to just by, well, if you Google Michelle Garcia, you will find lots of Michelles.
Yes.
And some of them are musicians and they're not very good. So I had to bring in my old Native American, name. And then, of course, what I do, and it was just a natural morph as the Rocking Horse came together.
Yeah, I think so. It's actually very fun to say, Michelle Rocking Horse. It's got a great great lyric to it.
Oh, thanks, Michaela. I appreciate that.
And the film, the Tipping the Scales website is www.tippingthescalesmovie.com.
There you go. Right. And I have other websites too, myname.com, of course, and then I'm also a Reverb Nation artist, and there's more information there.
Yes, and that's Reverb, R-E-V-E-R-B, Reverb Nation.
That's
and
correct.
Lots of information. Yeah, that's super. Anything you want to leave us with? What is the one message that you hope people take away from hearing your music?
One of courage and empowerment. Courage because we are LGBT. We have been challenged, most of us all our lives. Also, with ethnicity, being Native American, we are the caretakers of the earth. The earth right now is being, compromised by a lot of resources and people, and it just people that want to be in power, and it's the earth is its own entity, and as long as we are caretakers, we'll be all right. We just have to recognize that within ourselves, that we are each a caretaker of the earth.
Right, and we have the responsibility to be good stewards.
That's right, exactly.
Good. Well, thank you. I appreciate your courage. I know all of us who are listening this evening are inspired by people such as yourself who've been brave, who've taken the courage and plodded forth, because it's people like you who are the beacons, you people like you who lead the way and give courage and inspiration to the rest of us who may not quite have the strength to do it on our own, but we know someone else has done it, so it's
well,
a great...
Thank you for that. What I have to, I have to say that some of the stories, like Nothing to Lose on San Francisco Queers, No Time to Lose, was, all because of an FTM, a brother of mine who had undergone, a real unjust trial. And, mm-hmm. and it kind of, definitely inspired me to write No Time to Lose.
Well, we're going to make sure that people know again how to get your music. Reverb Nation CD Baby, I believe you said, right?
That's correct, yeah. And go to CD Baby and then type in my name. And correct. The whole long thing.
The whole long thing. And then we're going to look for you November 3rd at the SF Center for the debut of Tipping the Scales.
Oh, I'm so excited. That would be great.
It's great.
Hey, please come and see the film. I think you'll enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I have some footage in there that I have not seen myself in almost 40 years.
Wow.
That was from NBC News when they came to my house. So that's in there as well. So, wow.
Great. It'll be a good time.
Okay.
Thank you so much, my friend.
Michaela. It was great speaking with you.
Same
here. You have a great show.
Thank you. And we'll see you when you get back here, okay?
Yeah. So, listeners, thanks so much for everyone listening. It's an important show, Outbeat.
Very good. Thank you so much. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. And the Michelle Rocking Horse story does continue next week as I talk with my co-host, Gary Carnevale, who also happens to be the producer and director of Tipping the Scales. And then join us again here on Outbeat Music next month when I'll be featuring the music for After Hours, kind of the cozy, sultry, snuggle-up tunes for cool autumn nights. I'm Michaela Cannon. As always, I do remind you to have a great week. Be real. Be remarkable. Always keep that song in your heart. I'll see you next time.